gentlemen, welcome to the most electrifying, must-listen-to podcast in sports entertainment. Your three-time podcast champions for wrestling podcasts of this caliber. Welcome to FFC. I am your host, 3 years older, but oh so much bolder, the master of class himself, Damien Gentile Ellinghouse, accompanied, as always, by good friend, the bearded wonder, the Royal Doyle, Ryan Doyle. How are we?
How are you, sir?
I am doing just dandy because, Ryan, today is a special day. Not this particular day, but like the recording of this particular episode. And why is that?
3 years.
3 years.
Yes, it is 3 years. Oh my God. We have become men.
3 years ago. Now, like I said, not to the date. The actual date is like in November. But this represents our third anniversary episode. 3 years ago, we embarked on a magical, mystical journey. Just two red-nosed, snot-nosed lads delving out into the world and deciding that, you know what would be fun is if we did a wrestling podcast. And 3 years later, we are in the exact same place.
Somewhere there is the alternate timeline where the pandemic didn't happen and we ended it after 2 months, I think. Honestly, I think we, like, you know, if we were going to take a beacon of light after hell on earth, then I think, you know, was it the millions of lives saved? Nay. Was it the complete collapse of society? Nay, it was. We needed a podcast for catharsis, and Damien and I really like. This is how I personally feel: is that, you know, we needed something to keep us going, and then little did we know, here we are 3 years later.
You know, it was a silly, drunken idea. But I agree that I think it gave us a thing to look forward to in a time where there was nothing to look forward to. And I think that speaks to something.
It does. There were definitely some earlier episodes where, like, especially in New York, shit was rough. I mean, you, like, got on the podcast, you're just like, okay, let's talk about Roman Reigns.
Yep. Let's talk about the TVs, Ryan. Let's talk about...
4,000 people die today. It's like, okay, well, you know, I have some opinions on Hulk Hogan's first title reign.
20,000 people today.
All right. Oh, well, maybe we're going to talk about Ric Flair.
100,000 hospitalizations.
Let's do it, NWA backstory.
This year was an interesting year if you go into our numbers. So, Ryan, we had 790 plays across 16 episodes, right? Gives us a good, healthy 49 plays per episode average, which actually represents 40% growth this year. Now,
beats fucking meme.
I know what everyone's thinking. They're like, those are weird numbers to brag about. And to that, I say, how many plays do you have, person without a podcast? None.
Not even nothing. Like, I'm not gonna lie. Like, first off, to everyone listening, thank you so much. Like, seriously, we really appreciate this. It gives us purpose. It gives us drive. However, it's not fair to say to the hardcore listeners that this was kind of an off year for me and Damien. So it's kind of like the producers in the sense where it's just like, all right, fuck it, just throw something out there, and the crowd goes fucking apeshit. It's like, okay.
Yep.
It's like the scene in SpongeBob when, like, Squidward is, like, having, like, his little art show, and then, like, SpongeBob just comes out and starts cleaning up and people go fucking gaga over it.
a podcast more like belongs in the trash. Yeah, you know, I look at it as for us to be in a down year, and a down year that is largely predicated due to me just being a scholarly boy. And just I'm out here and I'm saving the world every day that I wake up. I just go out and I just save the fucking world. And like, it's hard to keep up your interests when you're Superman, you know, like how often do you hear Superman talk about how much he loves baseball? You don't. All he thinks about is saving Metropolis. And that's me, is I save Metropolis every day.
What was that? What'd you say about me?
Ryan has a Superman shirt on because we don't have a visual aspect here.
Yeah, you know, Damien's 8 pages into a thesis and I'm just like, podcast?
This Ryan deserves all the credit. I never thought about like, we need to take a break or we need to not do this. You know, I never considered that. But I would be lying if I said that I prioritized it the way that it deserves to be prioritized. And yet still, you, the listeners, rewarded us with 40% growth. You, the listeners, rewarded us with almost 800 plays. You, the listeners across 7 countries, rewarded us by finding out that 3 of you have us as your number one podcast, your number one most listened to podcast, that 15 of you we're in your top 10, that I think 7 of you are in your top 5. There's a lot of podcasts out there, Ryan. Now, like, I know what you're thinking. Okay, but like 2 of them are probably the hosts. And to that I say, like, mind your fucking business.
I don't think it is, because it's we not. Don't listen back to our stuff.
I don't listen to the product.
I only listen to the product when I'm like, you know, halfway through a 12 pack. And it's just like, let me check it out.
I'm very much Brock Lesnar yelling at Paul Heyman here. No, I don't watch the product, Paul. Why would I watch this?
Was the smartest writing ever.
That whole segment is just absolute fucking gold. You didn't know? No, I didn't know. How could you not know?
Very meta. Thank you, WWE.
Very meta. Spotify also tells us that we created 1,320 minutes of new content. That's 78% more than other creators in our category. So suck on that, Major Pied. Up yours, Jim Cornette show. Love you, Marking Out. You're great. You're
doing great. Where's our check for 64 cents?
Give me my royalty checks. I write my own fucking theme song. I come out here. I come hard to work every 3 to 2.5 weeks. And I just bust my ass for an hour and a half.
Oh, look, I have a letter from Spotify here, actually. I didn't open up my mail.
Oh, okay, good.
Dear, we don't know how to pronounce your name.
Yep.
We hereby enclose a check for 64 cents. However, due to the 2,872 copyright strikes on your podcast, you receive nothing. Sincerely, Spotify Gorgons.
You know, I was at Spotify headquarters today. It's a good thing I didn't have that letter with me, or I would have had to go have a conversation with old person that owns Spotify, Daniel Ek.
Oh my God.
Daniel Ek.
Fake name.
Look him up.
This guy. Oh, my.
Look him up.
God. He looks like the guy from the Great British Baking Show.
Daniel Ek, you look like the real life version of Sad Corbin. You are the energy of Billy Corgan mixed with a waiter. Oh. And I won't pay you shit. But I guess it's fair because you don't pay me shit either.
I read a great story about how Kim Thayil from Soundgarden was like fucking around backstage one time. And like they all ganged up on Billy Corgan. And then the next day, Billy Corgan comes out in eyeshadow in a Superman shirt. And he's just like, Kim, I just want to let you know you hurt me here. And he points at the Superman symbol. And Kim Thayil bit the side of his cheek so hard because he wasn't sure if he was fucking around or if he was serious. He didn't want to laugh. And that's why you're a Maoist, Kim. And that's why all Soundgarden fans are Maoists.
Yep. And that's why Billy Corgan owns the NWA and has Tyrus as the NWA World's Heavyweight Champion.
Y'all remember when we were giving him credit?
Yeah, I mean, there was that brief moment where Power was like, ooh, that's kind of cool. And then it was like, oh, God. Oh, oh, God. I mean, in fairness, like, you know, they had like Ricky Starks then.
Well, I mean, in fairness, AEW came around. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, suck it. Whatever it is, what it is. But still, did yourself new favors. So, as a special 3-year treat, Ryan, the Pat Patterson of FFC, has come up with yet another dastardly scheme. Another wicked, wild episode idea. A concept that I so brilliantly and immediately named the Three Stages of Hell. Ryan, what is the Three Stages of Hell? Or what are the... Do you use the plural if it's... I don't know how this goes.
Like Three Stages of Hells, you mean?
Como se llama?
Anyway, we're going to expand off today. We're going to expand off the idea of the wrestling iceberg. And what I'm going to propose to Damien are three questions. One of them at the base of it is going to be, you know, your generic casual conspiracy. And then we'll get into a little spicy conspiracy. And then we're going to get into the deep depths of the carcass of the Titanic at the bottom of the seafloor. I'll give him a dark one for him. So,
yeah, this is kind of this is like, you know, how it starts off with like maybe like a lumberjack match and then like a last man standing. And then it's like Hell in a Cell. You know, we're just I am going to play the part of heroic American hero Cody Rhodes tearing his pec before facing Seth Rollins in Hell in a Cell. And in order to go through Three Stages of Hell, I must have sustenance. And so, Ryan, today I'm drinking a true, true traditional classic. I have here, established in 1589, the original Hofbräu München. And with this Hofbräu, I have my Spatenstein.
Ah, very nice. You need the big boy mug.
Spaten was light 1397. So suck on that, Hofbräu. What do you have?
I have a polar.
I have a polar. Pineapple pomelo. I think I drank this last time, but it's my favorite flavor. Since 1882.
Oh. Well, the Germans have you beat too, so just gonna go ahead and pour me a little bit of that. Oh, yeah, it's just nice. Make sure to, you know, it's really important for the German ales and lagers. You got to give yourself a nice big head there. You know, you want to get yourself a nice meaty head. Contrary to contemporary beer opinions.
Our family has been making seltzer since 1882 when our great-great-grandfather, Ebenezer Polar, crafted what he called his best-tasting bubble recipe. Oh, what simple times.
If Ebenezer's family didn't own slaves, I'll eat a horse.
Well, I'm pretty sure it was like Ebenezer Polarowski, and they're like, no, please drop the last syllable.
So, to that... 2-3 years, I say, und trinken. I actually forgot. Prost. There you go. Or as they say in Spanish, which I'm in the middle of teaching myself, salud.
Salud. And it's very interesting because Schlanta is from Gaelic. And of course, the Gaelic spreads around, you know, France, Spain, Portugal. And all their words for cheers are kind of connected. It's very interesting. Linguist for you. Gina, get in here. We need a linguist. I don't have Noam Chomsky here, so I need your help.
Nothing excites her more. All right, Ryan, let's get hellish.
All right, Damien, your first question. Did Vince McMahon send Scott Hall and Kevin Nash to destroy WCW.
A classic conspiracy. As everybody knows, of course, the Clique, consisting of Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, Shawn Michaels, and Triple H, at this point, Hunter Hearst Helmsley and Diesel, have the infamous curtain call at Madison Square Garden. The year is 1994, or is it 5?
That was 95.
They give a big hug. Kayfabe is ruined and broken. Scott Hall, Razor Ramon, proceeds to show up in WCW. Kevin Nash not far behind him. They create the Outsiders. They enlist Hollywood Hulk Hogan into the NWO, and the rest is history. So we ask ourselves, was this all an elaborate Machiavellian ploy by Vincent Kennedy McMahon to ruin WCW? Now, to me, this seems fairly easy of an answer, which, like, this is an Occam's razor. The answer is no, because those were two people that I can't imagine he would have been, like, super happy to lose, especially considering that they then went on to create quite literally the hottest act in wrestling history. But I suppose if you wanted to play tinfoil hat, you could argue that Vince sent them over there with the idea that their ego would destroy WCW and didn't think about the idea that somebody like Hulk Hogan would join with them and that the NWO would be created. So, like, that's something we can think about.
Do you think Nash had a contribution to WCW's downfall? Does he not get enough blame for that?
I would almost argue that he gets too much blame. Like, does he deserve no blame? No, because that's kind of, you know, as WCW goes on and these huge contracts get given out to the older guys and everybody gets, you know, creative control. You know, Kevin Nash was right there with him as well, right? And of course, the common criticism about Kevin Nash is that Kevin Nash was lazy, right? He didn't work all that hard, which is, of course, bullshit. Kevin Nash was consistently entertaining, in great shape, was very, very good in the ring, but he knew when it was time to work and when it was time to not work. And I think that's your fault for expecting him to be on all the time.
That's interesting that you said that, because he's always, he's very much an old school guy. And obviously he's the first person to call you a mark if you're being one. That's a good point that you made, because, you know, I don't think wrestling fans understand the idea of when to turn it on, when to turn it off. Like, they always expect you to be on, right?
Yep.
And I think Nash, that was just a lot of it in WCW. It was just like, hey, we're collecting our checks here. Like, you're going to get what you're going to get. And granted, considering much of WCW's maligned history, you got a lot.
Now,
okay, so let's expand off that. Do you think they were expecting to get that much? Like, do you think it just became like when they originally planned Hogan's turn? Like, obviously, you know, it was going to be a monumental thing.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think that it was too much for them to handle?
Like, in late stage WCW?
Not even, when the height of NWO, like, they were just like, we're just going to roll with this. Like, there's no three stages of planning this. Like, it's just, you know.
So,
was it too big for its own good?
Now, I'm sure that this has been discussed ad nauseum amongst the various parties, but, you know, NWO was definitely something that, you know, it was meant to be a splash, right? It was Bischoff's, like, idea to make this huge splash. I don't think anyone could have predicted it to become as big as it was, any more than, like, WCW or ECW could have predicted Stone Cold to happen, or The Rock, you know, like, it's lightning in a bottle. And I think that, you know, they weren't booking at the time. I believe Dusty might have been head booker at that time, Dusty or Bischoff, in like the 83 week era. But I think when you had a group that hot, you know, you're not necessarily asking them to lose. So they don't necessarily have to be like, no, I refuse to not go over here. But also, like, you know, Nash was always fine with, like, embarrassing himself, you know, like in that classic heel way. So was Scott Hall. So I feel, you know, and Nash actually spoke about this recently on his podcast. And he said people would say Nash single-handedly destroyed WCW. Like, it would upset me. I'm thinking, like, wow, like, you're almost giving me, like, that's almost Trump status. So, like, I not only killed a wrestling show that at one point had beaten Vince McMahon for 83 weeks, I also forced them to sell the Braves, the Hawks, and everything that wasn't bolted down. You know, which is to the larger point of, like, you can blame Kevin Nash or Scott Hall or fucking Scott Steiner or even Bischoff or Hogan all you want, but, like, the, you know, like, they run themselves into the ground, and then Turner got sold, and that was it. So to go back to the question of, does Vince McMahon send Nash and Hall over there to destroy WCW? I'm going to say no, because if there's one thing people tend to know about Vince McMahon, it's Vince is not going to give somebody something for free if he thinks it has value. Nash and Hall left, and it was because their contracts expired and they chose not to re-sign. And I'm pretty sure WWF had made overtures to them. But, you know, the curtain call created bad blood. And I don't think anybody predicted how quickly NWO was going to blow up.
Okay.
So we can give this conspiracy I'm feeling a light two.
Should we expand off it?
You're the Meister here.
Well, we'll give another base just because it ties into here. So, you know, obviously Owen dying kind of puts a damper on it. But how much of a shoe do you think Montreal was?
Okay, right. Now, this is a topic that has been discussed to fucking death, right? So at the expense of trying to spare everybody hearing unqualified opinions on this for the millionth time, I think that it was a shoot, it was a non-shoot, and there are things you're never going to know. There was legitimate bad blood between Shawn Michaels and Bret. Shawn Michaels, when he, you know, gets the tap out, he looks visibly upset. Obviously, the, you know, thinking there is he was just selling being upset, and, you know, he's actually in on it. It's his idea. Vince doesn't like being spited, you know, like that. That's what this really boils down to, right? Is Vince McMahon is either somebody that, you know, can take a joke and loves when people push back until he doesn't. Right. That's how he was throughout his entire tenure as CEO and Booker and president of WWF, WWE. So I think at the end of the day, we can try to say all day long, like, I think it's easy to be like, oh, it was a work, you know, like, but who did it benefit? Who would that benefit as a work? Did that make Shawn a bigger star?
No.
Did that, like, launch Bret Hart into somewhere else? No, he literally fucking left the company. So, like, if it was a work, it was a really fucking badly planned one.
I just wanted to expand off the idea that, you know, Vince had an evil mastermind plan to WCW when a lot of it was just like, yeah, go make money over there, you know?
So you're looking at it from the perspective of, like, is the screw job a setup to send Bret Hart over to WCW?
Not to destroy it, but it was just like, you know, a lot of the anecdotes that you receive from wrestlers today were like, you know, WWF wasn't, this is, keep in mind, this is all pre-Attitude Era. So you have to ask yourself, what, like, how would this have this played out 2 years down the road, right? You know, if the screw job happened, just like if Bret was in the Attitude Era, which would have been very interesting. I think it would just be an expansion off his character of, like, he would have eventually been Kurt Angle without, like, the squeaky clean American image. It would just been like, you know, like, this is all, like, all this sex and shit is bullshit, blah, 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 real wrestling. Like, you know, I think his character probably would have elevated into that.
Right. I just think that, like, And look, there are people that legitimately think that it was a work. People like Kevin Nash or Scott Hall, Paul Bearer, you know, people that like have credibility. JR kind of thinks that too. But again, I just don't like fully, I don't grasp what it would have done for anybody. Because like, keep in mind at this point, WCW is handily beating WWF in the ratings, right? We are beginning the height of the Attitude Era. We are in the middle of like NWO at its fucking peak. And then you're going to give them like one of the best professional wrestlers to ever live just because like you like Brett. I don't fucking buy it. I don't buy it.
Okay. Yeah. I think we give a little more credit. You know, that's always like he sent over Russo. He sent over Scott and Hall. It's just like, no, you're giving Vince a lot more credit than he deserves.
Well, I think that I could see this being a more plausible conspiracy than I could like he sent the outsiders to do that. So if I gave that a light two, this gets a mild four.
Okay.
So we're not really into depths yet.
We're not. But let's go even deeper. Damien, did Inoki work with the Yakuza to stab Ricky Dozan?
Ha ha! Here's an interesting one. Now, here's what we know about the relationship between Antonio Inoki and Ricky Dozan, right? Antonio Inoki and Giant Baba, the, you know, legendary protege of Ricky Dozan, the Korean wrestler who wrestled in Japan and becomes the most famous wrestler in that place at the time. And I should qualify, he is Japanese, but he's Korean born. Now, by all accounts, Inoki and Baba viewed Ricky Dozan like a father figure, right? And it wasn't until Ricky Dozan died that like Inoki and Baba started kind of falling out because Inoki felt that he deserved to be the ace, and Baba, I think, disagreed is how that went. But as we've seen in fantasy and as we've seen in real life royalty, blood means very little. And relationships mean very little when you're talking about the top. Now, what do we know about Ricky Dozan aside from being a legendary wrestler? Well, we know that he was a horrendous drinker. A truly horrendous drinker. Now, he was pretty well liked, but he was a little bit of a violent drunk, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he was into tabloids all the time. He got into trouble, and then he gets into painkillers. Does Antonio Inoki, rising through the ranks, see Ricky Dozan as a real threat to the burgeoning professional wrestling scene in East Asia? Well, what do you think, Ryan? What's your take here?
It's kind of interesting because everything that I read about Ricky Dozan is that a lot of his image was cleaned up over the years, you know. And yes. I don't know if that's a result of Baba and Inoki. Just, you know, I don't think the crave for lore and backstory behind certain individuals' downfall is as great in Asia as it is in America. If you kind of understand what I'm talking about. Because if there's something that Americans love, it's a good downfall. And it's a good digging up of shit after someone dies. So, whether it's warranted or not, but you know what I mean. Like, you know, tonight on Fox, greatest murders in American celebrity history. But everything you do with... It's funny that you just did that because a lot of like stuff, I realize a lot of wrestlers' themes are just stock stuff that just get used in like B-roll news clips and stuff. I love whenever there's like something on like a news thing and like they play the Hardy Boys theme.
Yes. I love that. I love that everyone was like, yo, it's so cool that AEW got the Hardy Boys theme. And it's like, Yeah, because no one owned it. That's the point. I also want to make a quick correction. While Inoki was fired from JWA for a hostile takeover, it was not because of disagreements with Baba. They had decided to go their own ways.
Right.
So I just want to clear that up there.
No, but it's interesting, though, because I proposed this question to you a little bit a couple episodes ago where, you know, what does the wrestling world look like if Riki Dozan stayed alive? And it's interesting because, you know, the iron was certainly hot. Like, you know, I think whether or not it was a split between New Japan and All Japan, I think that, you know, maybe Inoki knew what was coming down the road. And like the 70s had to have been an important decade for Japanese wrestling to get its foothold in a lot of aspects. You know, it's interesting to think about. Obviously, it's completely ridiculous, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, to, you know, to not slander the dead here, right? Inoki, by most metrics, was a little bit of a cutthroat businessman, but seemed to have a pretty good heart. He was notoriously controversial in Japan because as an acting, even before as an acting politician, but as an acting member of their government, he frequently would, or I should say frequently, but several times went over to North Korea and repeatedly tried to have, you know, to convince the Japanese government to make overtures to North Korea, mm-hmm. a country that has been openly hostile to Japan since the end of the Korean War. And of course, the relationship between Korea and Japan is really, really littered with just like horrible, horrifying shit. At the hands of the Japanese, and it's why it was kind of so shocking that Riki Dozan became so popular, because Korean-born Japanese people, there's a name for them that I don't currently remember, but it's like a pejorative term. It's a pejorative term because like Koreans were seen as like lesser people, and like Japanese, like Korean born Japanese people were therefore seen as inferior, like even to this day.
Right.
So that like kind of spoke to use like, you know, the words of Kazuchika Okada or Hiroshi Tanahashi or Inoki, you know, the healing powers of professional wrestling, that Riki Dozan just was like a larger than life guy. The scene suffered really badly without him, because Inoki and Baba were not like as established as him yet. But I think ultimately the scene in Japan benefits from Inoki and Baba deciding to leave the JWA, or in Inoki's case, getting fired, starting All Japan and New Japan, and then like truly leading Japan into like this golden age of wrestling and like making it the hub that it is now. Now, this one's spicier. So I'm going to give this a strong six, right? Not because of plausibility necessarily, but because now we're really wading into the depths of spooky here.
Who do you think had more ability to kill somebody? Who do you think actually killed somebody more? Do you think it was Vince, or do you think it was Inoki? Not directly.
With their own hands?
No.
Not with their own bare hands?
I mean, I think that would be Inoki, but
Inoki,
who do you think like actually might have more blood on their hand?
So New Japan pretty famously has like had Yakuza involvement probably since inception, which is what makes this spicier, is like Inoki, I don't know necessarily that Inoki had direct Yakuza ties or that he was, you know, like in the pocket, whatever, but the Yakuza has been involved with New Japan for fucking ever.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on whether you think it was just like one of those things where it's like the Yakuza had a hand in that pie because it was a big industry, and therefore it's just like you're paying them off, or whether you think Inoki's like a part of it. I'll say this, right, without trying to get too hyperbolic necessarily. I view Vince McMahon as a genuine sociopath in a lot of ways. I don't know. Maybe sociopath is the wrong word. I think that like he's got some sort of personality disorder, if I was going to like
diagnose
look at him from afar.
Yeah.
Like he's not, it's probably wrong to call him a sociopath. Like, he's clearly got strong emotions about, like, his kids and, like, his relationship with his father. And I think, you know, all that shit. But he also, like, really seems to not be able to grasp other people's, like, input on shit. Yeah. And, like, I don't necessarily know that I think Vince would ever, like, put a hit out on somebody. But Vince is definitely the type of person that I feel like I could see in a, like, coked out fucking rage just being like, somebody needs to do something about him, you know, and then somebody does.
I guess, like, the most extreme example would be, like, Vince's hand in the Jimmy Snuka murder, you know?
Well,
him showing up with the briefcase.
Look, at the very, very least, Vince McMahon is culpable in trying to hide that Jimmy Snuka is a murderer, or was, right? Mm-hmm. Like no way to work around that. Like, he murdered somebody, Vince McMahon knew that, and Vince McMahon chose to not do anything about that and, like, actively showcase him. That's a thing. That's a real thing. Vince himself has also, like, sexually assaulted a bunch of people, and, you know, just in general is a man of questionable integrity and character and moral character. So, it's a toss up. I don't know. For Yakuza ties alone, I'll say Inoki.
Okay.
Now, technically, this is our third stage. However, I feel that the screw job deserves to not be listed as one of the stages because everyone's talked about it to death. So
I guess it was more so the ability of Vince. Like, did WWF have actual ability to destroy WCW that way?
Right.
You know?
Well, do you have a final stage?
I do.
Okay, so let's make this the three asterisk stages of hell.
Okay, that's fine.
So this Inoki kills Riki Dozan. That's a strong six for me. So we're a little murky now. The iceberg's getting bigger at the bottom here.
Okay, you ready?
Drag me down.
Has Kane always been played by the same person?
Oh, not as dark as the last one, but now here's something interesting. All right. Well, why don't you start us off? What's your take here?
Now, this is no discredit to Glenn Jacobs. Glenn Jacobs was clearly Kane by a certain point. But you look at fucking Kane in, like, Hell in a Cell when he first debuted, and by God, you know. I think they might have tested individuals as Kane. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Was Kane at one point Undertaker? You know? I think there's any discernible tattoos on Undertaker's arm. It's very interesting. I heard this one the other day and I was like, okay. That's interesting.
So, of course, it's easy to be like, yes, it's always been Glenn Jacobs. And, like, look, Glenn Jacobs was a real fucking, like, physical specimen. But it was, like, remarkable. Like you said, when he first shows up in WWF, when he first shows up at the Hell in a Cell match, he's this, like, horrifying physical physical specimen. Not that Dr. Isaac Yankum wasn't, but it's definitely different. Mm-hmm. But for the sake of argument here, right, seems unlikely that Undertaker would have ever played Kane, but who else could have reasonably played Kane at other points in his career? Keeping in mind that, like, this kind of loses its legs once he unmasks and then starts wearing the half mask.
Right.
Not that you, like, you know, not that you can't fake the half mask, but it gets harder.
Well, you gotta think of somebody very, like, of his stature, right?
I mean, I could probably, like, if we were just, like, going to go out there, if you think of, like, a young Big Show, like, the Giant, they were not that far in size, but I feel like even then, the Giant was, like, bigger.
I think he had more beef on him.
But they were similarly agile, like, when they were young.
Oh, yeah. You know, one of the things on the iceberg is Big Show's moonsault.
Isn't that a moonsault that, like, has only happened in Legend?
Supposedly it happened like in a test, and Hulk Hogan shut that shit down because
he was like, if you do moonsaults, who the fuck cares about anyone else?
So that's funny to think about. It'd be funny to think about, like, you know, if Ultimate Warrior was Kane.
You know what's interesting though? You can correct me if I'm wrong here, but so the Giant debuts in, like, what, 95, 96, not long after the NWO starts?
Yeah.
I mean, wasn't Vader already doing moonsaults by then?
Yeah, I guess.
Like, Vader in Japan was already doing moonsaults.
But the optics of Big Show doing a moonsault, I feel, would be greater than Vader, just because what Big Show represented, you know, he was the second coming of Andre the Giant. So
yeah,
if he's
fair.
Presented as Andre the Giant, and then all of a sudden it's Andre the Giant, like, imagine if Andre the Giant did a fucking moonsault, like, you know what I mean? Which I'm sure that he could have.
Well, I feel like I've seen him do a drop kick before, and I was like, well, that's horrifying.
Because we got to remember, like, when the popular culture viewing of Andre the Giant is much late in his career, you know? Like, we saw him, like, when he was fine, like, you know, when at the height of his career, he was kind of like in the twilight, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just because his body was just kept growing.
There's only so many other people that I feel like could have ever realistically portrayed Kane. It's a short list. Like, Kevin Nash, I guess, kind of had the right build for it.
Yeah.
But Kane was unique in that, like, Kane, that was just a big boy. You know, Glenn Jacobs, just a fucking big man, a big, muscly, meaty man. Ultimately, I think this one's funner than the others. But again, I just don't think it has many legs, Ryan.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny when you think about wrestling conspiracies, right, and the iceberg. So, to be honest, I'd probably consider Riki Dozan being killed by Inoki to be the bottom of this iceberg.
I should have probably did that one.
For sake of levity,
yeah.
in the conversations.
Which one's the spiciest?
Wrestling conspiracies are always funny because then there's, like, so many stories where you're like, that did happen, and it feels too unbelievable to have happened. Like, you know, it's a good example, like, the plane, obviously. A plane ride from hell. Feels like a conspiracy.
Were drugs and alcohol planted on the plane? I think that one came up on my list. Because, no. Because they were all fucking just those dudes, you know what I mean? I think a fun one would be, like, did WWE not want to deal with a gender-bending character in Goldust, and that's why he never got the belt? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Something like that. Let's see what another good one would be.
Well, okay, here. I'll give you three.
All right, give me three.
I'll give you three. Okay. The first one.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Let's go with, I don't want to do that one. Let's do this one.
Okay.
When Ultimate Warrior came back, was he dead?
What? So you're
when Ultimate Warrior came back, had Warrior died and been replaced with somebody else?
I don't know enough about Jim Hellwig in the 80s to confidently say yes or no.
All I can ever think about is, like, I don't remember that he was as outspoken.
Right. That's my thing, you know? Does he have stories of him being a fucking... Like, if... You know, Sting was a notorious asshole in the 80s. I don't know if anybody really knew that. And that's why that led him to becoming, you know, born again and stuff like that. But regardless, like, I didn't realize, like, how much of a loose cannon he was back in the day in terms of drugs and stuff like that. I think this would make more sense if it was the opposite. If, like, Jim Hellwig was, like, you know, who he was in the 80s. And then all of a sudden he became, like, this prolific character and won all these championships. I think then the conspiracy would have a little more footing, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think Jim Hellwig was always, you know, the ultimate warrior.
I think that it definitely is worth noting that Warrior went truly unhinged at the end of his career.
Yeah.
And, you know, look, he did look different, inarguably, when he came back. But, you know,
I think that character was too important to lose. Do I think that who would be the greatest person that they would have to replace? That would probably be Ultimate Warrior. I think that character is really important to Vince at the time to, you know, replace Hogan. You know what I mean? To
yeah.
have something like a larger than life character, because everybody else besides Undertaker, you know, was just a guy. Whereas, you know, Ultimate Warrior had more of like an ethereal presence to him and stuff like that. And obviously that character became Undertaker in terms of like that upper look. Because, like, you know, wrestling always has this level of characters who are not human, you know?
Yep.
So I think that's certainly one of them. But yeah, that's an interesting one.
Specifically, if you're interested, the true rumor was that it was Kerry Von Erich.
Interesting. Oh, I love that. Yo. I fucking love that. That makes, like, look up Kerry Von Erich. Look at his physique. And yo, that's great. I love that one.
All right.
Do you see that movie coming out, by the way?
What is it called?
I don't know what it's going to be called, but A24 is going to be producing a Von Erich family movie. The Iron Claw. Oh my God. Perfect.
The Iron Claw. Yeah. And MJF is going to be in it.
So in it is going to be Lip from Shameless. And of course, Carmine from The Bear, which I think he should be, like, that's an amazing show. He should be referred to as that from now on. You have Zac Efron as Kevin Von Erich.
And he looks fucking huge.
He does. Also, people are, like, they're being a little mean. Like, he split his face open on his fucking fountain or some shit. So his face looks a little different. Like, what happened to him? What happened? What happened to his face? Oh, actually, he had a tragic answer. I don't want to know that. What happened to his face? He looks weird. Who else is going to be in it? Elizabeth Olsen. Holy shit. Oh, no, that's a different movie. Never mind. Sorry. Never mind.
I mean, I love that MJF is playing fake Von Erich.
What do you mean? Oh, that's right. What is his character going to be?
He's playing the, like, fake Von Erich that was, I think, supposed to be, like, Fritz's brother mm-hmm. at some point.
Okay.
Or, like, one of the Von Erich brothers. Okay. So what do we rate this conspiracy that Warrior's dead?
Kerry Von Erich being it? Or, like, Jim Hellwig?
Let me expand.
I love both. I'll give that a light six. Now, let me ask you this.
Ooh, light six. Okay.
Did Jim Hellwig kill Kerry Von Erich to get the Ultimate Warrior back?
Oh my God. Oh, nope. Not touching that. We're moving on. Holy shit.
All right, let me give you two modern ones to wrap it up.
Excuse me.
Nope, sorry.
Am I not giving you my three?
Okay. Your three.
Excuse me.
Second one.
All right. You did the screw job, so I'll do the other famous one.
Okay.
Did Macho Man hook up with an underage Stephanie McMahon.
Okay. Let's delve into this one, right? So, what happened with Macho Man? Because by all accounts, Macho Man should have overtaken Hulk Hogan, right? Macho Man left WWF in 1994, the same year that Stephanie turned 18. Now, imagine you're Vince McMahon. You have money, connections, and power to seriously fuck somebody up if you wanted to, right? I think that's fair to say.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, you're in the back. You know, things aren't really going that great in 94. But you just hear, ooh, yeah, from behind a closed door, right? What is your reaction to that going to be?
Not great. I might cackle first, though.
Why would Vince... Here's the thing you have to ask yourself about that conspiracy. Because it could have happened. I mean, more dastardly things happened, right? By all accounts, Vince cried, according to stories, when Macho Man died. He locked himself in his office and cried all afternoon. Why wouldn't Vince... Like, why would it just be, you gotta go? Like, you know what I mean? Was it because... Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't the... You know, why wouldn't the punishment be greater? Aside from, here, you're gonna be on Raw until you're gonna be let go to WCW.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And that's like the big gas on the fire, is that, like, the famous motif about Vince McMahon is that he will always let somebody come back if he thinks there's money to be made.
Right.
Yet Macho Man was not allowed back at any point until they started doing that mobile game, and then he died right
tragically
after.
Yeah.
So, like, of all the people in the world, why would Macho Man be the one person that Vince McMahon refuses to deal with? And there's, like, you know, fire in other places. But ultimately, right, again, in the realm of plausibility, Vince McMahon, if he finds out that Macho Man sleeps with his 16-year-old daughter, like, do we really think he just doesn't do business with him?
Like,
do we really think that that's, like, just what it is? It's like, okay, I don't do business with
right,
him
yeah,
now.
No, that's it. Okay, you gotta go. You gotta go.
Oh, I can't.
You gotta
I
go,
can't.
Randy.
Randy, pal, I gotta tell you, I can't do this. You know, good luck.
Also, like, out of all the things to be discussed over the years, all the things that have been revealed in the wrestling lore history, like, this would have been the biggest one. You know. Let me ask you this. Who started this rumor?
Vince. Vince started
Shit,
it himself.
I gotta find a way why I let go of one of the biggest guys in fucking wrestling history.
The actual reason why he refused to work with Randy is because one time Randy ate a bigger steak than him, and that was, like, it for business. He couldn't look him in the eye anymore.
Listen, pal, we want to have you in the first class of the Hall of Fame. Ooh, yeah, that's, I don't think I'm ready to come back to WWE, Vince. Oh, okay. Talk to you later. Let's start a rumor that he fucks Stephanie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm, if it gets out to the boys that I don't eat the biggest porterhouse, I'll lose the locker room. All right, so what do we rate this long-standing wrestling rumor?
It's one of the more classic ones. I'm going to have to go light 8.
Light 8.
It will never be determined. It's always going to be something in the back of someone's mind, you know.
Yeah. Now, you went dark, I'll go darker.
Okay, here we go.
This is arguably the darkest in a filthy dark room. This is arguably the darkest wrestling conspiracy theory that I've ever heard. And it's not, did Vince kill Owen Hart?
Mm-hmm.
It is, did Kevin Sullivan murder Chris Benoit and his family, or orchestrate their deaths?
Yeah, I knew this one was going to come up.
Now, the big thing with Kevin, the whole reason why this is even something that anyone ever brought up is twofold. As we spoke about some time ago, Kevin Sullivan is like kind of like the original archetype of the like spooky wrestler.
The Satanist wrestler.
He was the Ministry of Darkness, right? That's Kevin Sullivan.
No, he was.
Or is that Undertaker?
Well, that's Undertaker. But I mean, like, he had a Ministry of Darkness in WCW. So you're not wrong.
Yeah. So like Kevin Sullivan was the OG spooky character. He was a Satanist. And this was in an era where wrestling was still viewed by a fair amount of people as being legitimate, or at the very least that like the people are not always playing characters. And so Kevin Sullivan being a Satanist during the Reagan years, through the Bush years, like obviously doesn't help that. But the bigger reason why this has ever been suggested is because of the relationship that Kevin Sullivan had with Nancy Benoit.
They were married, right?
They married in 1985. And then Nancy left him for his then rival, Chris Benoit. And it started in 1996 when Kevin Sullivan conceived a storyline in which Nancy would leave him for Chris Benoit. He wanted them to like share hotel rooms and hold hands and preserve kayfabe, and then like it became a real thing. It was never okay again. Kevin Sullivan and Benoit never got along from that point forward, and largely avoided talking about one another until the murder of the Benoit family, at which point Kevin Sullivan gives a tribute. Now, like I said, in a dark room, this is not only like maybe the darkest wrestling conspiracy, it's also probably the most heinous.
Yeah.
It's like a very particular level of like, holy shit, is that a real thing? The reason why this even has any level of legs, really, aside from the fact that, I mean, let's call it what it is, right? America has an obsession. People in general have an obsession with grisly murders.
Mm-hmm.
And the wrestling community at large has always like had a real difficult time talking about Chris Benoit from this point forward. And in general, we don't like to think that the people we like and watch on TV or maybe even idolize could be capable of like such horrific acts of violence. And by the same token, people also have a hard time believing that like Chris Benoit legitimately had lost his mind by then. Like, you know, the autopsy revealing him to have like the brain of a 90-year-old. Like, people have a really hard time grasping like just how gone he was by that point. But a former pro wrestler known as Johnny Angel had like posted this on MySpace, that he like got it from MySpace, and basically talks about how Kevin Sullivan is actually a high ranking member of the Satanic Church, and that he carried this out after like holding this grudge for 15 years. And like tortured the kid, and like, it's really the only reason why. And like, this dude's like a born again Christian, so he's fucking nuts. But this is a conspiracy where it's less fun to talk about and more just like a stark reminder that, like, boy, people really just have a hard time believing that this is a thing that happened, huh?
It's wrestling fans coping that they're, you know, because Benoit, in a lot of sense, was the promised one in that era, you know, to defeat Triple H and, you know, all these big guys. I think people really want to apply something to it that, you know, to make it make sense for them. Or they just want to turn into a fucking wrestling storyline like they do with everything else in wrestling. I mean, come on. Like, literally everything we discuss today are like real life tragedies that we tried to apply a wrestling spin on it. Or how could we make this work? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's not enough that people died. It's like we have to make it into a storyline. They already had a real life storyline where Nancy left him. That's like a real thing that happened.
Yeah.
But that's not enough. It has to be more.
One, do you know about the Chavo call?
Well, it was a text, wasn't it?
He called Benoit, and 45 minutes in the conversation, Chris told him that there was someone knocking at the door and that there was a scuffle and the line went dead.
And then what we know after that is that he sent several people, one of whom was, I think maybe the first of whom was Chavo, about how like the dogs are in the back locked up and it's what ultimately led to Chavo telling people that they needed to get police over there.
Right.
It makes me think, right? Levity is gone, Ryan. We don't have fun anymore. Now we talk about sad things. It makes me think a lot about false flag conspiracies in general, and specifically around things like Sandy Hook. Like when there is a thing that happens that is so grisly, so like unimaginably tragic, people cope by just it's easier to believe that it's not a real thing, that like there's a cover up here, that like people are fine, or that people really died but it's like not the thing you think. Because much in the same way that you're like, I can't believe that this guy that I fucking idolized on TV murdered his wife and son and then like killed himself. It's the same logic at the end of the day of people being like, I can't believe that somebody would shoot up a school.
Right. But also when you ask those conspiracies, it's like, what's the benefit from it? The benefit from Sandy Hook was that that was staged to get guns taken away. You know,
the benefit here is Kevin Sullivan gets his revenge. That's the revenge.
Here's a very real fact, though. You can look this up, or you can verify it. Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, Brian Pillman, Owen Hart, all died the night or the day before they were due to win a title. 2007 was a very vicious year. Bam Bam Bigelow died in January. Sherry Martel died 2 days prior to Chris Benoit. And who was Sherry Martel dating for a long time? Kevin Sullivan. And then Brian Adams and Johnny Crush died 2 months later.
Yeah. I feel like that's when you started really seeing like how bad wrestling was for people.
Yeah.
From a certain point. Like, there's a reason why you don't see as many retired wrestlers in as much pain these days. Like, right. Even Stone Cold, like, who's in the same era as Benoit, like, and in a lot of ways, like, not just as fucked up, but like has his fucking issues. Like, I don't know. I just feel like people that got out of the game quicker, or that like that nowadays people always talk about, like Kofi always talks about how it's like the boys play video games and like,
yeah, you know, that's funny
together.
When they say that, like you look at someone like Xavier Woods, like, oh, he plays video games in the back. What a nerd. That dude made a sex tape with Paige.
He's also so big. I think people forget because he's in a faction with Big E, but Xavier Woods is massive. He is a big lad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So where do we put Kevin Sullivan killed Chris Benoit?
10.
That's a 10, that's a right? 10. That's a spicy, strong 10. I think I'm not sure I can think of a like darker conspiracy than that. Obviously, like Vince killing Owen is probably just about as dark.
Mm-hmm.
But that is people like can't believe a tragedy. Like, and also it's because like Vince didn't kill him, but like he's 100% culpable.
Knew who Benoit's neighbor was, right? And who supposedly found out first.
Oh,
Regal.
Regal.
And Regal, by all accounts, was sober at the time, and he was going through that like that great like GM of like, I'm going to shut down Raw early and all that stuff. Uh-huh. And then that happened, and then his house was raided. And then that that pretty much killed his career, his wrestling career. You know?
Ooh, ooh boy.
Yeah.
Wow. Intense.
Also, there's the, which is verified, that this was post, like, the like, it actually being discussed as a murder was posted first on a forum as opposed to the news. Which you can think of, like, it was some mark who was a policeman that went on to, which is very real. Like, that's probably the most real situation I could think of. Like, some cop or some investigator, like, was like, I gotta fucking talk about this.
Yes.
And it's very interesting. I think another dark one, not really, was did WWE fake Roman's leukemia?
Well, yeah, that's just like that. That's not even a wrestling conspiracy so much as that, like, that's just shitheads on the internet and Dave Meltzer.
No, wait, did he have?
He's the one that said something about, like, if I remember correctly, he said that he knew people that had like a similar type of leukemia or the same type of leukemia, mm-hmm. and that Roman couldn't be doing that well if that's what he had.
Right.
Now, because Dave Meltzer is on the spectrum and is like unwell, he like almost certainly did not mean to suggest that Roman didn't have cancer,
yeah.
and probably meant some like much more like innocuous thing. Like, it doesn't even matter what he meant. Like, I'm sure he didn't mean that, but that is what he said. That is the thing that came out of his mouth that he said on his radio show, is that Roman can't have leukemia because that he should be sicker.
Well, this is also a guy who thought that a brain was replaced in a man. So. Oh my God.
They put Katsuyori Shibata's brain out of his skull and put it next to him to lessen the bleeding. That is the thing that Dave Meltzer said.
It was very good. You know, I feel like we never, we always tried to not delve into those two topics, but we did. So
we've hit the grand slam of things that no wrestling podcast should be talking about in 2022 anymore.
Are you happy? I know there's fans out there that have been waiting for us to talk about the fucking Benoit murder. And
are you happy now? You happy?
We talked about it.
We're a true crime podcast now.
The man with the fucking brain of a 90-year-old Alzheimer's patient. He didn't do it.
There you go.
He didn't do it, guys.
Have a great time.
So let me ask you this. I guess what's the most current conspiracy? I guess we'll just go right into this. I knew this was going to fucking happen, but it's happening, Damien. And I have to ask you. Is the CM Punk thing a work?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
That is without a doubt the strongest conspiracy that exists currently.
Here's one thing that I just want to address. CM Punk is an asshole, yes or no? Why isn't he, like, he's silent. It's just very odd that he's silent. Do you think that Tony has that much litigation on him to not talk about? It's just very odd that, like, you know, you have, I don't know, the elites being very, very brash with the way that they're presenting or alluding to CM Punk in their current work, right?
Yes. I think that in all likelihood, by the way, I was positive that I was wrong about this, but it looks like I'm not. Do you know we actually have never done a conspiracy episode? I really thought we had done one.
Yeah. I think we've touched upon things.
Well, that's fun, because I...
That's great. Well,
There you go. Something unique for once. Here's the thing. I think in all likelihood, CM Punk must not have anything substantial from a legal perspective, or I feel like there's no fucking way Tony Khan would let the elite go out there and just mock him repeatedly. I think that any shot that this was a work, like when I, or yeah, any shot that this was a work went out the window the minute it happened. Like that was not a kayfabe promo. That was not CM Punk trying to talk off the cuff. That was like an unhinged Phil Brooks talking about shit. Like that's just what that was.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I think Tony's a little smarter than I'm giving credit for, but it would be interesting to see if like they let him just get the story out there first.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like maybe the big reason why Tony's refusing to touch it is because at this point it's gone too long and he's like, what the fuck is the point anymore?
Yeah, I think it's just too big for it. He cannot personally, like, Vince was Vince. Vince could have handled this in 2 seconds. Tony Khan is dealing with 5 individuals larger than life, much larger than him. The story came out today that his mom had a stroke in between that and Grand Slam. So I think he was just like, look, fuck it. I don't care. It's just very interesting that like the other shoe hasn't dropped for CM Punk yet.
I think that knowing about Tony's mom makes his response make more sense. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be like, because for anyone that didn't hear, in the scrum for Final Battle, the Ring of Honor pay-per-view coming up this weekend, I believe, or if not this weekend, next weekend, he talked about how after Full Gear and in between that and Grand Slam, he found out that his mother had like several strokes and was just like a lot of shit going on with that. And it makes his like response to all of this make more sense because it's like, oh, he wasn't there. He wasn't there. He wasn't mentally there. And that's not what was going on. It doesn't change the fact that he handled it terribly and like he handled it terribly as CM Punk was talking. But, you know, it makes it make more sense. Do you know what the true biggest conspiracy is in wrestling, Ryan?
Right now?
The true biggest conspiracy is the powers that be preventing Sami Zayn's documentary from getting released about the very real conspiracy against him in WWE. That's the true conspiracy here.
Hmm.
To be clear, the biggest conspiracy in wrestling is that Vince McMahon paid WWE funds in hush money to women that he slept with and then got fired for it. That's the actual biggest conspiracy.
Oh, I thought it was because HBK and Vince were lovers.
No, that's just, we knew that. We just knew that.
That's a fact, brother.
Everybody thinks that it's Shawn Michaels that thinks his sings his theme song, but it's not. It's Vince.
Dude, I totally, they're
they sound the same.
They do. Hmm.
So that's something to chew on. So folks, you've gone with us to hell and back, and you've made it out in one piece. A true crime podcast. This is not. But if you do want to listen to a really, really good in-depth podcast that is not from a wrestling perspective about the Benoit murders, Last Podcast on the Left, I believe, has a really good episode about it where it's treated with all the levity that one needs to listen to a murder podcast about that.
Yeah.
So that's if anybody's interested, I would check out that. So Ryan, as we wrap up this 3 year, right, I want to take a minute to touch on what's happening in New Japan, a couple of big things happening, and then I want to finish this up with something special.
Sure.
So the World Tag League and Super Junior Tag League have been going on for about the last month or so. We are coming up to the last for both. I believe in the next couple of days you will see the finales for both. And what you're going to be seeing here is, so first off, there have been cheering fans in pockets, and notably, Obari went to like a government hearing along with Yuji Nagata, God fucking bless Blue Justice. They went to the first convening of the nonpartisan Diet Caucus for the Promotion of Combat Sports, which is a real thing that Japan has. And we're like, for the love of God, please, please, can we go back to cheering? Please. The fact that New Japan does not have cheering when like other promotions and like, you know, other sports do it, like, guys, it's over. It's gone. It's done. There's nothing left to do. You're running events. Like, I don't hate the clap crowds as much as everyone else, but you just miss a hot Japanese crowd for these big matches. It's just like so fucking integral to the experience of Japanese wrestling.
They cannot go another fucking Wrestle Kingdom without fucking...
No, especially not, right? And that's what we're going to talk about here, right? So real quick, we're coming up to the last night of both. World Tag League sees the team of Yo and Leo Rush. Yo Leo, I think is what they're calling themselves, or Yo Rush. At 12 points, and that's a five-way tie between them, the team of Sock Justice, with his Alex Zane and Gloats El Lindemann, Bushi and Gloats Titan, the United Empire team of Catch 2/2, TJP, and Francesco Akira, the current junior tag champions, and the Bullet Club Impact team of Ace Austin and Chris Bay, who love seeing them in New Japan. And so what we're going to be seeing is, I don't know who, so basically you're one of those five teams is going to be the ones to come out the winner. You can predict it's probably not going to be, the current reigning champions. I would say smart money would probably be on either Bullet Club if they want to really give a big push to Ace Austin, and clearly they seem to like him a lot. Or I wouldn't be shocked if they gave it to Alex Zane and El Lindemann, who have both been great and are crowd favorites. For the World Tag League, unfortunately, the United Empire team of Great O'Khan and Jeff Cobb had to forfeit all their matches after they were hurt, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. But you have... You have Mark Davis and Kyle Fletcher, aka Aussie Open. Wait, is that Aussie Open? Let me make sure I'm not lying to you here. Yeah, that's Aussie Open. They're in a comfortable lead with 14 points. I don't know how anyone else is supposed to catch them, to be honest. No one else is at 12. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, that is Aussie Open. So I don't know. It'll probably be them, I guess.
Sure.
I don't. Whatever. That's. I haven't been watching this. I should. I've heard that the United Empire teams, both Aussie Open and TJP and Francesco Akira, have been fucking lightning in a bottle. I've also heard that the LA Dojo team of Alex Coughlin, who I fucking love, and the returning Gabriel Kidd have also been incredible. So
was Alex the one that was stuck in Japan?
Alex was not stuck in Japan. Alex was in the LA Dojo. He was like kind of the biggest standout of the LA Dojo lads. Like, I would say Coughlin and like Carl Fredericks were probably like the two biggest standouts. Oh, and you know what? Let me not disrespect Clark Connors. Those are probably the three biggest young lines to come from the LA Dojo. So he worked throughout the pandemic on Strong. So anyway, whoever wins that will go on to take on the reigning champions of Bad Luck Fale and Chase Owens, which all leads us to, we're coming up to Wrestle Kingdom, January 4th, the day of days. It is strongly suspected that we are going to have cheering back. And this is one fucking hell of a lineup already. You are going to see a few things here. You're going to see the New Japan World TV Championship Tournament Final, which is the new belt that they have announced. That's going to be between Ren Narita, Mini Shibata, and Zack Sabre Jr. in what I'm sure is going to be an absolutely phenomenal match. You're going to see a four-way for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion. You're going to see Hiromu Takahashi, Master Wato, Taiji Ishimori, the reigning champion, and El Desperado go at it. They had a really fun, like, can they coexist tag match, like, a couple months ago, or like a month or two ago, that was fucking incredible. You're going to get, obviously, the main event, Kazuchika Okada versus Jay White for the World Heavyweight Championship. You're going to get the brand new IWGP Women's Championship, and you're going to get Tam Nakano against Kairi Sane. So that's going to be cool.
Oh, nice.
And then, of course, what is arguably the biggest match, or at least one carrying the most hype, is you're going to be getting the IWGP U.S. Heavyweight Championship, Will Ospreay versus Kenny Omega. So the return of Kenny Omega, the first time he will be in New Japan on a New Japan card since January 4th, 2018.
I'm really excited for that because I'm excited to see Kenny presented in a more serious manner.
Kenny in the Tokyo Dome against Will Ospreay at this stage of his career with a fucking roaring Tokyo crowd. For anybody that forgot who Kenny Omega is, you're all about to relearn.
Because when was his last like serious match against him and Hangman?
Yeah. Yeah, it was to him and Hangman, probably the last serious match. I mean, not that his match against, like,
when's the last time you saw Kenny go all out?
Like, the last time honestly, that match against the United Empire, where it was him and where it was the Elite versus Ospreay and Aussie Open, like, he went fucking balls to the wall, but he was still coming off of injury. So you're going to see, like, a fully healthy Omega against a fully healthy Ospreay in the Tokyo Dome on the grandest stage of them all. For the belt that Kenny was the inaugural champion for. It's just great stuff. You know, it's December 7th. In the next couple of weeks, you'll get a proper New Japan rundown as we always do. So, Ryan, as we have done the last couple of anniversaries, I want to take this time to just think about, you know, what we're grateful for and what we feel happy about and what we want to accomplish in this upcoming year. Now, let me tell you something, folks. Remember when we told you that we were going to get some people on AEW TV? Well, haven't we just?
Yeah, we sure did.
And Bryce Donovan is right behind him. I promise you that. He's showing up, and then I will brag about it forever.
I'm already planning the new kid on the block.
Yes.
Will Bryce come between Anthony
Max and Anthony? Oh, love that. Love that. His one true love. It's like the Golden Lovers all over again. So, Ryan, in spite of the trials and tribulations, what do you take away from this year? What are you happy about? What do you want to see us do better? What do you want to see us continue to do?
Well, I mean, the landscape has certainly fucking changed. I think the biggest conspiracy that we've discussed over the last couple of years is Vince leaving, and it happened. And as a result, WWE is so much better, you know?
So I think we do not believe Tony Khan is Booker of the Year. I honestly think I might give it to Triple H.
Yeah. You know he's going to give it to Tony.
But I think, like, deservedly, I'd probably be giving it to Triple H. The Bloodline shit is some of the best shit.
Oh, my God. It's so good. Well, I mean, that's the thing. We now have three. Like, we don't have to fucking talk about AEW New Japan and go, WWE.
Hey, here's what's good. Yeah, nope. Now we can be like, oh, yeah, Survivor Series happened, and you got these, which we didn't even talk about. And I didn't, whatever, it's not irrelevant. But point being, yeah, we don't have to sigh. And it's not like WWE is any less evil, but, like, look, they're all evil. They're all run by bad people. Mm-hmm. Don't support billionaires. But wrestling is better when WWE does not suck.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, it's nice. Anyway, continue.
What's one thing I would like for us to do this year? I think the main thing for us is interviews. Now, that just comes down to me and Damian, the ability that we could do it at the time of our hands. You know, I don't, like, not necessarily anybody big, but I think I think it would benefit us to, you know, start grabbing some, see who we could talk to amongst the CAP community, amongst the New York Wrestling Connection community. Like, they're rising stars. I think that it would be great if we got a handle on, you know, the Long Island scene. I mean, Creative Pro is dominating in terms of man. The wrestling landscape. I mean,
they're just all over the place.
It's really great as something that started out as, you know, hey, become a wrestler for a day. Like, oh, what do you think it's like to become a wrestler? Like, Brian Myers and his team, his vision absolutely has set the landscape for the next decade in wrestling. Incredible.
They sure have.
So I think, you know, getting amongst that community now, then we can add to our litany of AEW stars that we've interviewed, you know.
I agree.
What about you? What's one thing that you would like to see?
Well, so like I said earlier, you know, I really am. I'm proud of us for being able to stick it out. You know, I'll give myself a little bit of credit here. It hasn't been easy to like keep focus on my hobbies. Like I struggle to watch wrestling. I struggle to watch the most recent pay-per-views. Like it is difficult for me to keep up. And the podcast lets me stay on my toes and make sure that I am still, you know, keeping up, even if I can't watch all the time. But more importantly, it's centered me and, you know, given me something that isn't like social work related. And yeah. I think that's really important, you know, when you're in school, you're in work and you're in for the same thing, like you got to have your outlets. And so I am proud of us being able to continue. And I am proud to have you as my partner and to be able, you know, to have somebody that is understanding and that is, you know, a real good friend and somebody that, you know, lets me be my stupid wonky self and continues to do this with me week in and week out. And I'm proud that we were able to still get some growth. You know, obviously folks out there are still tuning in. You know, you guys clearly see something here. And so I think what I really want to see happen is I want us to be able to, I don't care about getting big. That's not why we do this podcast, not why we started it. It's never going to be why we do it. But I would like to try to branch out a little bit to maybe, you know, remember why we do this podcast. This mm-hmm. is a podcast for casuals and hardcores alike. And I want to make sure that we kind of stay true to that mantra. I'm with you on interviews. You know, I don't think we need to be an interview podcast, but I definitely want to, like you said, kind of like, not get a foothold, but I want to be able to support the Long Island scene and all the good shit that Creative Pro and New York Wrestling Connection and are doing. And even like, you know, more local ones like Beyond and Progress and shit. I want to be able to continue supporting the indies and like shining lights on. You know, I am legitimately very proud that we were able to kind of talk about people like Lee Johnson, not Lee Johnson, like Lee Moriarty. And Wheeler Yuta and Daniel Garcia. It's not like we discovered them, obviously, but it's right. Cool to be able to, you know, talk about like, yo, watch out for them. Watch out for, you know, Willow Nightingale and just kind of see them prosper and be like, yeah, there you fucking go. Like, that's what I'm talking about. That's why we tell you to watch them. So I definitely am with you on that. But in general, Ryan, what I want to see from us over this next year is I just want to see us continue being quite literally the greatest podcast in wrestling. That's what I want.
Well, I appreciate you, brother. And you brought something into my life that, you know, I didn't think it was going to be possible on my own or I had no idea. But you know what? You were right in the sense of like, this is wrestling hour for us. Like, you know, our one day a month, you know, or 2 days a month, like, you know, we're able to we already established that, like, you know, doing this has made us appreciate wrestling so much more, you know. Mm-hmm. You can't go up to everybody and discuss, you know, classic championship wrestling in Texas in the 70s with a lot of people. So,
no.
You know, as a historian, I love bringing that out into the culture. I think, you know, especially with the revival of everything in the last 5 years, I think it's very important to touch upon those roots because it was being lost. Just because WWE was its own product and therefore WWE was the only thing you really had to think about. But because mm-hmm. there are new avenues in wrestling, because there are new connections, you want to go back and you want to ask yourself, like we did today, why did this happen? Why is it like this? How come this didn't happen? So I think those questions have to be answered. But yeah, more importantly, like this is just, It's cathartic. It's very nice. And I really appreciate this. And I certainly didn't think 3 years down the road. Certainly at points this year, it looked a little futile between you being busy and things that went on in our lives. You know, it's good to see that we're still fucking standing, and I feel more confident going into this year than I did last year. Let's put it that way.
I agree. I think that, you know, we're in a new golden era of wrestling, and I think we're in a new golden era of the podcast. And we've talked before about some changes that we want to make, not necessarily to the format, but, you know, maybe title change, maybe actually get a new theme going. And these are some short-term goals that I really do want to accomplish. You know, time for a new theme song, ladies and gentlemen. I know the old one is the best thing you've ever heard, but it's time for something better. And, you know, I got to get the old creative juices flowing.
Should we set one large goal? Because I'll tell you my large goal. All I really want to do with this, if I can, is book a show at Amity Music Hall where we do a live podcast and we get, I don't know, Mick Foley on stage with us.
Mick Foley? You said large goal, not fucking impossible goal.
Is it that impossible?
I think, look, I was with you when you were like, book a live show at Amityville and just see who shows up.
Let's leave it there.
You know what? I can dig that. I largely think live podcasts are fucking terrible, but
it's going to be an absolute mess. I'll tell you that right now.
I think when you've got the right people, it's a good thing, and I think that could be fun. I think that could be fun to do a little fucking thing in a venue. So I won't even say Amityville. I'm with you on that. Our goal is to do a live podcast recording,
or even like in a brewery or somewhere like that. You know, I think that'd be pretty cool.
I'm on board with that. 100%. Let's make it happen this year.
And I can't wait to stutter at my first question to you.
Yes.
So, we can't edit this, Ryan. Okay, great.
But as always, you know, at the end of the day, it all boils down to you guys and gals that come in and out. Guys, gals, non-binary folks that just come in and out and they listen. And they continue to listen and they support. And it's just, you know, I used to think that a certain number is bad or a certain number is good. But at this point, just getting to see any amount, you know, listen, like I said, you know, almost 50 people listening to an episode on average is something I'm going to take. Like, that's fucking cool to me. It's cool that like 30 to 50 people in any given like episode are like, oh, you know, FFC released an episode. Let's listen to that. Especially because I know a fair amount of people that listen aren't really wrestling fans. And that is exactly why we wanted to do this in the first place, is to get people that had like that kind of like tertiary interest or, you know, not really interested, but, you know, curious, like to be able to get them somewhat interested in what I consider to be just the pinnacle of entertainment, just God's gift to entertainment. So we thank you.
Yeah, being told we are the New Japan podcast, I was like, what?
I'll take it. So we'll wrap this up with Ryan. Give me one album you need the people to listen to.
Well, let me go with what was my main song of the year and what my most enjoyed album was of the year. And I'm talking about God's Country by Chad Pyle. Mm. My song of the year was Why. And Why reminds me of you 100%.
Travis sent it to me, and you know, good friend of the podcast, Travis Gentile, was like, I feel like this is you. And it's literally just a guy screaming over and over again, why do people need to live on the streets? Over and over. Love it.
It's a very poetic. It reminds me of Henry Rollins. It reminds me of...
very Rollins. I agree.
Did you ever listen to Popular by Not a Surf?
No.
It's a very spoken word song where he talks about like, he's talking from the presence of like someone in high school, and like, you know, he's very sarcastic. He's like, oh yeah, I think people should just see each other one time. I think that would appreciate it. Isn't that the best? Isn't that the best you interact with everybody? Anyway, Why is just... It's about a question that we should ask ourselves every day.
Why?
Why do people have to live outside?
Why do people have to live outside?
Do you know what it's like to have scabies? Do you know what it's like to push all your shit in a shopping cart around? And I don't know what theory Chatpile reads, but certainly this is the greatest American prose delivered to us in years. And I'm really not being sarcastic. Like, this is something that we have to address.
Simple and elegant.
Simple and elegant. So Chatpile just fucking absolutely crushing it. They're going to be playing the Stanley Hotel with Lingua Ignata on our last shows before she retires. So yeah, they're going places, baby.
I'm going to cheat and give you two, but only because like I'm late to the party and I feel like I need to repent for that. But Travis told me to listen to this, and I didn't not listen for any particular reason, but it just avoided me until I put it on the other day, and I was like, oopsies, that's maybe the best album I've heard all year. And that's Diaspora Problems.
Fuck
by
yeah.
Soul Glow.
Yes.
Just if you're looking for just like it, the best way that I can describe them is imagine the energy of first three albums, Bad Brains, and mix that with like the instrumentation of like Dillinger Escape Plan or like Converge, you know, and just imagine this perfect cacophony of hardcore, post-hardcore. So that is a strong contender. I will tell you to listen to it. But what is probably going to end up my album of the year is most likely a Wilhelm Scream's most recent album. But I'm going to give it instead to a band that I really love and who have made their first and now last album in 6 years. And that is White Lung with their album Premonition. White Lung is a three piece band from Canada. And they are heavy and fast and melodic and dark and just uplifting, and it's almost hard to describe what they sound like, but the best way I could say is like they kind of remind me of son of a fucking bitch, not I'm gonna look it up as I'm talking, but they're just like,
okay.
Yeah, no, it's bad, this isn't good. They are just like this awesome fucking punk band.
Okay.
Strung out. There you go. Fucking strung out. Just awesome guitar riffing that honestly does make me think of like Axe to Fall from Converge, but they're just heavy, melodic.
Takes me back.
And it's the last album that they're ever going to make. And specifically the song, since Ryan listed one, that I'll give is probably my new favorite song of the year, which is If You're Gone. So that's probably my album recommendation of the year. So
nice.
There you have it, folks. You have officially listened to the third iteration of FFC's super mega big happy time celebration birthday. Or as we call it, FFC's Super Awesome Happy Fun Birthday Time Celebration 3. We thank you for taking this journey with us. We look forward to doing it for many more years.
Stay forever. Tuned next time to where we discuss which Southern wrestlers were in the KKK.
All of them. So, I'm just kidding. I love you, Cody. Love you, Dusty.
I was about to say, don't you dare put Dusty in that.
Now, I don't want to hear nothing about that, baby. I don't want to hear no KKK coming out your mouth when you're talking about the dream. Not when you're talking about the dream, baby.
For all flavors, for all types of people.
The dream is for all flavors of people, daddy. Whether you're black, white, polka dot, black, purple, it don't matter. The dream's here for you, daddy.
Yeah, you like polka dots, pal? You like polka dots? You like polka dots so much?
Oh, no. So, ladies and gentlemen, for Ryan, for myself, and for the FFC universe, this has been the most electrifying must-listen-to podcast in sports entertainment. Then, now, forever. This has been F. F, C.